Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, December 3rd, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that webpage and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it, copy it off, and use it as often as you'd like. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through the use of that worksheet process and or given testimonials about how the active application of these tools has improved their life. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and get access to a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet process, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope you do that soon and often. It frequently leads people to have questions or comments or testimonials of their own. And if you're willing to grace us with that, if you have any comments, questions, testimonials, or requests for support in using the tools, give us a call, 563-999-3581. When you've called that number, press 1 on your phone. It'll give you a little icon of a hand now goes up by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code. Being that today is the 337th day of the year, we're looking at the Course in Miracles workbook lesson number 337. 337 reads, My sinlessness protects me from all harm. The commentary reads, My sinlessness ensures me perfect peace, eternal safety, everlasting love, freedom forever from all thought of loss, complete deliverance from suffering. Only happiness can be my state, for only happiness was given to me. What must I do to know all this is mine? I must accept atonement for myself, the at-one-ment for myself, and nothing more. The Creator has already done all things that need to be done. I I must learn that I need do nothing for myself, for I need but accept for myself my perfect nature, my total sinlessness that was created for me and now already mine, to feel the Creator's love protecting me from harm, to understand my Father loves his offspring, to know that I am the offspring that the Creator loves. You who created me in sinlessness are not mistaken about what I am. I was mistaken when I thought that I sinned. But I now accept the at-one-ment, the atonement for myself. Creator, my dream is ended now, and that is all. And we're also reading the Course in Miracles experiment book by Pam Grout. And her lesson 337 is titled, I Need Do Nothing, Episode 2. And she quotes Huey Long, who said, hard work is damn near as overrated as monogamy. Pam writes, we in the West tend to be action-oriented. The Course urges us to save time by not doing. In fact, we're told to practice little else. Do nothing. Lesson 337 purports that this is a grand statement of allegiance. Consider this. A caterpillar does very little before emerging from the chrysalis ready to fly. Eckhart Tolle sat on a park bench for 2.5 years before becoming what Watkins Review called, quote, the most spiritually influential person in the world. Nelson Mandela was imprisoned on tiny Robben Island for 27 years before becoming president and one of the most revolutionary leaders of our time. So those are some thoughts from Pam Grout and the Course in Miracles experiment book and our Course in Miracles workbook lesson for today, Friday, December 3rd, 2021. And as usual, we have time for comments and questions. How can we support you today? What would be of service to you to discuss in more detail? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. This morning, I was made aware that it's entirely possible that Richard Rohr is listening to our internet show. And he listened to the discussion near the end of the show yesterday, and then he decided to write his daily meditation for today. It's titled, Creating God in Our Own Image. And this email says, the Advent season begins with scriptures that focus on the second coming of Christ. At times, this has been presented as a frightening event. That frightening event has been exacerbated by the negative images of God, which many Christians hold. So Richard Rohr writes, your image of God creates you or defeats you. This is an absolute connection. There is an absolute connection between how we see God and how we see ourselves in the universe. The word for God, G-O-D, is a stand-in word for everything. Reality, truth, the very shape of our universe. This is why good theology and spirituality can make such a major difference. They can make a difference in how we live our daily lives in this world. God is reality with a face, which is the only way most humans know how to relate to anything. There has to be a face. After years of giving and receiving spiritual direction, it has become clear to me and to many of my colleagues that most people's operative image of God is initially a subtle combination of their mom and dad and other early authority figures. Without an interior journey of prayer or inner experience, much of religion is largely just childhood conditioning. So unless you do your own inner experience, journey of prayer, questioning, asking to be shown, what your religion will consist of is what you learned in your childhood. He goes on to say, yet atheists and many former Christians rightly react against this because such religion is so childish and often fear-based, and so they argue against a caricature of faith. Richard says, I wouldn't believe in that God myself. Our goal, of course, is to grow toward an adult religion that includes reason, faith, and inner experience that we can trust. He says, a mature God creates mature people. A big God creates big people. A punitive God creates punitive people. If our mothers were punitive, our God is usually punitive too. We will then spend much of our lives submitting to that punitive God or angrily reacting against it. If our father figures were cold and withdrawn, we will assume that God is cold and withdrawn too. All scriptures, Jesus and the mystics, to be to the contrary. Because all the scriptures, all the teachings of Jesus, they are not cold and withdrawn. If all authority figures in our life come through men, we probably assume and even prefer a male image of God, even if our hearts might desire otherwise. As we were taught in scholastic philosophy, whatever is received in the manner of the receiver. Another way to say it is, to a cow, God looks like a cow. To a person, God looks like a person. So this thing is hidden in plain sight, but it still remains well hidden to most Christians. All of this is mirrored in political worldviews as well. Good theology makes for good politics and positive social relationships. Bad theology makes for stingy politics, a largely reward/punishment framework, xenophobia, and highly controlled relationships. Richard writes, for me as a Christian, the still underdeveloped image of God as Trinity is the way out and the way through all the limited concepts of God. Jesus comes to invite us into an infinite and eternal flow of perfect love between three, which flows only in one entirely positive direction. There is no backlash in the Trinity, but only infinite outpouring, which is the entire universe. Yet even here we need to give each of the three a placeholder name, a face, and a personality. And every time we do that, I might add, we limit it. We limit our perception, and we limit our willingness to be in the moment and directly observe the flow of life. So, I was trying to pull up the notes I made this morning on listening to Pema Chodron's book, Start Where You Are. And yesterday or the day before, I was talking about how Pema says, we dislike those who display our own rejected qualities. And we have projected those qualities into our image of the outside world. She suggests that every time I have anger, and I add any other negative emotion, come up in my awareness, I could choose to realize that this is a boulder I've been carrying around in my backpack. So If I scan the environment and realize that neither I nor any of my loved ones are in physical danger, then I could choose to recognize that the negative emotional state I just experienced is something I carried with me into this moment. Often my mind tells me that someone or something outside of me is causing me to feel that emotion. She calls them Juans or Juanitas. And she says, it's the Juans and Juanitas who present us with these dilemmas and these challenges. She goes on to say, basically, the only way you can communicate with the Juans and Juanitas in your life is by taking the teachings and practices, in this Buddhist tradition or in your tradition, but take them very personally. Right? Don't trust anybody else's interpretations because you yourself have the wisdom within and you yourself will find out how to open that door. Now, this is almost exactly what I've been talking about all throughout this week and began with last Friday in the talk I was doing about taking people, things, ideas, even God off a pedestal. Because every time I do that, everything I put on a pedestal, I put as outside of me. And here's Pema Chodron from the Buddhist philosophy again saying, the only way to find what you need is to look inside yourself. There is rooted in you, the Creator put in you, the access way. You have the wisdom within, and you yourself will find out how to open that door. Last night in the Thursday support group, we listened to a Guy Finley talk, and he said at the end of the talk, quite emotionally, quite in a very, very heartfelt way, the exercises that he suggests at the end of many of his talks are things that he has done himself and found useful. He stated he would never suggest an exercise unless he's already worked with it for himself and found it to be transformative. There's a story about an ancient Buddhist teacher who decided to go to a new country, and he was told, oh, you're not going to need your teachings there because the people are there are so nice. So he took with him a young man that he knew was very abrasive and very caustic and always speaking out and always triggering people, because he said, how can I continue to grow if I'm around people who are so nice that I never get triggered? And then, of course, he got to the new country and he realized, oh, these people trigger me all kinds of ways, and so I didn't really need to bring this Bengali tea boy who is so abrasive. I could have just had my everyday interactions with these people. Pema Chodron writes, in our own lives, the Bengali tea boys are those people who, when you let them into the front door of your house, they go right down to the basement where you store lots of things you would rather not deal with. They pick out one of them, and they bring it up to you, and they say, hey, is this yours? Your everyday life, Way of Mastery says this so clearly, your very, what you call everyday life, is the perfect teaching school for you, the perfect ashram, the perfect set of life situations, stimuli, things that you will end up getting triggered by because of the interpretation you will place on them. Your very life is the perfect way to learn and grow. And Guy Finley says, the lessons you need to learn in life, they ride into your life. You don't need to go searching for them. They're going to ride into your life. Guess what they're riding in on? They're riding in on the back of the events you don't want. He goes on to say, the importance of any event for you in your life is directly proportional to how much you do not want that event. And the importance of the lesson that is attached to that event is directly proportional to how much you don't want the event. So you don't have to go searching around for others. And you can extrapolate from what's already been said that when I blame anyone or anything outside of me for having, in my opinion, caused me to feel something I don't like, what I'm doing in that moment is rejecting the lesson. I'm resisting the revelation. And for anybody who says they really want to learn, to grow, to get better, to know God, to be a better person, to reach enlightenment, any of those statements, it's so critically important for them to move into the realization that they are the ones, only, always, and forever, who are creating their emotional experience. There's another thing we did in the support group last night. We watched a TED Talk from Lisa Feldman Barrett, B-A-R-R-E-T-T. And the title of the talk we listened to, it's about an 18-and-a-half-minute talk. The title of the talk was, You Are Not at the Mercy of Your Emotions. Double dash. Your brain creates them. And after we were done with the talk, a group member said, well, you know, that's really a lot of what we talk about, except she didn't mention anything about the resonance. And I said, yes, because she's a physical scientist, and she believes she's dealing with a physical universe, and so she's tracking what scanning devices and measuring devices from a physical realm can measure, so she's not going to talk about and the energy of resonance and emotions, and yet everything else she said is almost exactly what we teach, which is we make guesses about what our physical sensations mean, and we label them, and that's what we call our emotional state. And so her suggestion for dealing with it, her admission about how she's begun working with her own situation is to just practice shifting her guesses about what an upset stomach means or a tightness in her chest means or, a tickle in her throat means, etc. We are the ones, we said this so often on this show, you have the infinite capacity to choose the focus of your conscious awareness in each new present moment. And it's the focus of that conscious awareness in each new present moment which literally, actually creates your experience of life in each moment. Nothing else. And here is hard science, Lisa Feldman Barrett, studying for, I think she said, 25 years. She's been doing the research on emotions and what causes them, and she's validating that. She's saying, guess what? You're creating your own emotions. You're making guesses about what these physical sensations in your body mean. And that's all that's happening. Your emotions are not being done to you. They're not being caused by anyone or anything outside of you. getting validated over and over and over again with our personal experience and with the hard science. And we have a set of tools at whyagain.org that can help us learn to work with, understand, manage, take the meaning from. You know, there's another thing that I do. I occasionally get these readings from Elephant Journal. This is just a collection of writers who... this is sometimes their first way to get published. And she writes about the best thing to do when we feel gripped by shame. And she does this fairly good writing description of how shame hits violently in her guts. And she starts to feel all of a sudden like she's underwater, looking out at the scene, unworthy to be this human being. And then it starts to affect how she's able to be present for her daughter and how she's not able to stay present in the moment with her daughter. And she's rushing to put her daughter to bed and get through the evening so she can be alone and either eat or collapse or beat herself up, which has been her pattern for years. So instead of continuing to do that, what she's learned is, instead of crawling into a cave or beating herself up or eating endlessly, she's learned to stop. She's learned to become curious about those feelings, to ask herself questions. And here again, she emphasizes being gentle with herself. And she asks herself tenderly, "Diane, darling, what are you feeling?" And when she's willing to do that and actually soften and be gentle with herself, the tears come. And sometimes they're deep tears and sobbing, and there has to be waves of those, and then she gently asks again, and then she finally gets to a more gentle expression of the tears and the emotion. And the message of that writing is, these emotions have messages for us. And they're seeking to be integrated into our experience. When we make room for slowing down, questioning, gently questioning, accepting, as Krishnamurti would say, embracing our negative emotions the way we would a wounded child. When we make room for that, healing begins to happen. Again, probably also in this week I mentioned the Rumi quote that is something like, in the all pain, in the presence of love, becomes medicine. You might have said it the other way around, right? In the presence of love, all pain becomes medicine. Well, that's what we're going for. We're going for understanding that we are the ones creating the pain, the fear, the sadness, the anger, and here's a hard scientist who says our brains create our emotions. They're not hardwired into us. They're not built from what was programmed into us at birth. They're just built. They're built by our experiences and our training and conditioning, and they're built based on our brain making its best guess about what this physical sensation in our experience might mean. And so the invitation is, choose again. If you've chosen a negative interpretation for one of those physical sensations, if you've chosen a negative emotional label, if you've chosen to blame someone or something outside of you for that experience, choose again. That's the invitation from Course in Miracles. That's the invitation from the Diedrich Wolzak work, which is based in Course in Miracles. I think I've mentioned that I was doing a talk at a Unity church years ago, and I was asked to talk about lesson 3, 4, and 5 in the Way of Mastery. And that's just way too much deep, rich, powerful stuff to talk about in a 20 or 25 minute talk. So I thought, I will look at the theme of choosing and choice. And I thought, oh my gosh, look, I'm going to have to go through these three lessons and sort out. Then I remembered, hey, wait, I've got a Kindle. And I've got the Way of Mastery on Kindle. So I put it on search for just, you know, these three, just in the first of the three books of the Way of Mastery, the Way of the Heart. And there are three books, the Way of the Heart, the Way of Transformation, and the Way of Knowing. And so in just the first book, I set Kindle to search for the word choose. And there were over 90-some citations where in the Way of Mastery, in just that first book, it talks about choosing, choices. Everything about this deep spiritual work is it's a choice. Every time you've been told by someone or something in your family, your religion, your culture, that things are being done to you, that you're a victim, every time that's come up, it's been in error. And it is entirely possible for you to choose differently, to begin to observe differently, especially when you're introduced to the possibility and you're given tools like the ones we're given in whyagain.org. I can sit with an intense emotion. I can feel overwhelmed. I can blame, or I could choose again. And that's the invitation. Understand you have the answers, or at least you have within you a connection to that which can give you the answers. Guy Finley said, you've been placed in this world by the Creator with an instant, constant connection to the forces that can teach you. And they will never abandon you if you just ask to be taught. So that's our extended intro for today and thoughts from Pema Chodron's work and Guy Finley and Lisa Feldman Barrett. How can we assist you today to be more actively observing in your life, to be more a conscious creator of your life experience? 563-999-3581. Call that number, press 1, and we'll have a conversation. What would be of use for you to spend this next 25 or 26 minutes? Give us a call. Let us know how we can support you. It's going to be the weekend. We've got 2 days coming up where there's no Mindshifter support group, no Mindshifters radio. You can talk about what are you going to do this weekend? What are you looking forward to? What are you dreading? Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Kim. I love how you integrated all that stuff. Read the teeny quote from Pam Grout again by Huey Long. I read it this morning early, and I just thought, I don't get this quote. So, and then
the,
I have something
the
else.
One from today's lesson 337. She titles the lesson, I Need Do Nothing, Episode 2. And she quotes Huey Long, who says, hard work is damn near as overrated as monogamy.
I just couldn't put that anywhere. I didn't know what to do with that one.
Well, so this is a lesson about not doing. This is a lesson about how the Creator has already done all this for me. All I need to do is accept the gift of life, that happiness is given to me, that I was created in this perfect state.
Yeah.
I wasn't created with original sin. I was created with original blessing. I don't need to do anything. And Huey Long says, hard work is overrated. we're told, work hard, put your nose to the grindstone, and he says it's overrated.
It wasn't that part. It was the monogamy part that I didn't understand.
Well, he's a person who thinks it's great to be sleeping around.
Okay,
the monogamy
so
is just
sort of a joke.
It's just another thing
okay,
he thinks is overrated.
Okay, that's his joke. I thought, oh, gee, really? You know, I tend to defibrillize.
Yeah, he's joking about how he doesn't think monogamy is a good thing and he doesn't think hard work is a good thing.
Okay,
but,
got it.
But,
thank you.
But monogamy is not part of the spiritual lesson here.
I thought it was, Dr. Tim, and I was saying, what, come again? Okay, good, thank you. Yeah, I don't know who Huey Long is, but if I had known that about him, I should have figured it out. Yep, okay, thanks. Good. Well, that one's done. And the other thing is, pedestalizing is so fascinating to me, but I realize the underside of that same coin is judging against someone or hating them or being mad at them or whatever. That's the kind of
or yourself.
Pedestalizing, too.
Or
yeah.
yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't I hit that fairly strongly on Friday? Didn't
if
I
not
talk
for
fairly
me,
strongly
I guess I hit
about how it is every time you slam yourself, it's the same as putting somebody else on a pedestal or an ideal on a pedestal.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't metabolize that. Thank you. I got it. I thought that was my original thought and brilliant thought for the day. But you already said it on Friday. Okay. Good.
It's just hitting you, sinking in at a deeper level. And it's so important for us to realize that. It's critically important for us to see that judgment at any level, whether I judge myself as good or bad or somebody else as good or bad or blame, all of it is just the other side of the same coin.
Yeah. Excellent.
Putting myself down
is
the same counterproductive thing as putting somebody else up on a pedestal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That was really all I had on my mind. I've been listening. I don't have anything else to say, I'm afraid.
Well, no need to be afraid.
Okay,
it's good. Thank you for that input, and I will mute you so you can listen to the rest of the show in peace and comfort. Thank you for the call. Blessings.
Okay. Thanks, Dr. Tim.
So we've got about 20 minutes left. If Michael and Jeannie show up on time for the second hour, and we have time to take your call, your comments, your questions, your answers, as I like to say, your soliloquies, 563-999-3581. How can we support you today? What's on your mind? I was working with someone earlier, and they were having an absolute meltdown about loneliness, and that, you know, there's a way. It's like any other word. We create our meaning for that word. And I was trying to help her understand and get clear about what meaning she has given that word loneliness. And she was just stuck, absolutely stuck. But what she said is that every time she thinks about it, every time she thinks about writing to somebody and admitting that she's lonely, she just gets completely, she feels sick to her stomach and she shuts down completely. So we discussed how it is, that's a really useful situation or a prime situation that would make, where she could make use of, that's what I wanted to say, this is a great situation for her to make use of the concept of word links. somewhere in her mind, she has hooked up the concept, all kinds of emotions, all kinds of meaning to the word lonely or loneliness, and every one of them is negative. Every one of them is so powerfully negative that when that thought comes to her, she feels gut-wrenching discomfort. And so we suggested that she do some work to try and uncover what are the specific negative meanings that she has attributed to that word loneliness. And so the assignment, you know, she's willing to do the assignment before the next session, is to spend some time with a blank sheet of paper with the word loneliness written at the top and just free associate to it. If she wants to, she could say loneliness is or loneliness means or if I'm lonely, it means whatever. Or she could just put the word there and start doing that free association. And if she's willing to do that, she will uncover what she has made this thing mean, this word, this collection of letters. It is nothing more than some symbols on a page. And yet she has somehow made it mean something extraordinarily powerful, emotionally powerful for her. The next step of that, if she uncovers, you know, the actual connection she's made mentally and emotionally for that, the next step would be for her to create a positive word link and practice writing that, speaking that, and watching how that shifts her experience in life. Again, this is right in line with the Lisa Feldman Barrett research. We create our emotions. They are not done to us. They are not created by the outside. They aren't hardwired into us. They aren't built from hardwired neural patterns. They are built by our experience, our training, and our labeling. And as she talks so clearly in that TED Talk, there are volumes of research. She said she and her team have read every study that's been done for the last 20-plus years. And the conclusions are very straightforward and clear. We are making guesses. We are creating our own emotions based on the guesses we make. They're not being done to us. It's not part of a thing we inherited. It's not hardwired into our system to feel one way or another. We have built our emotional responses based on guesses our brain is making about the physical sensations that we experience and whatever training we have about the context in which those occur. So there's somebody I was working with earlier today who has built some very intense negative meanings, constructs, associations around the word lonely or loneliness. And unless she discovers what those associations are, what those beliefs and meanings are, and then actively works to dismantle them and or build other more positive associations, unless she's willing to do that, her life's going to continue to be driven by that negative association. Is this Ellen?
Yes, it is. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome, Ellen.
Thank you.
What's on your mind?
Well, I heard you say, you know, about this woman that you're talking about, and that how we make guesses about the physical sensations. And I was a little confused at first because I, you know, what I've been able to do with, you know, my emotions is, you know, I'm doing all this like inner child work now, and I can see where the feelings that I had, you know, I can directly trace them to the beliefs that I took on, the false beliefs I took on about myself. And I never really tied it to any sort of physical sensation. But then I was just thinking, well, but I did have this form of what for me was physical abuse. It was tickling. And that physical sensation, I mean, what I felt when I was tickled was torture for me. So is this what the type of thing that you're talking about where, like, I made it up that it's torture? Or I guess I'm just trying to see if this relates to what you're talking about.
Well, give me a moment here. What I think you're saying is that when you were being tickled, it was so unpleasant for you that it was torturous.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then when you felt like this torturous thing was being done to you, what emotion would you create?
Oh. I think there's more than one. But, I mean, it was so, I don't know if it was fear. It felt like the parts of me that were the most tender were just being totally violated. And
okay, that's a thought. And when you have a thought,
that
the tender parts of me are being violated, what emotion would you generate?
Well, and I didn't, and I'm sure I didn't have those thoughts then. I have those thoughts now about it. Back then, it was just, I mean, all I could do was scream and flail and do everything in my power to try and get out of the situation, which usually I wasn't able to because I was smaller and not as strong. But I'm just trying to think of, I don't even know what I often have trouble identifying emotions. I mean, I would have to think there was fear because I wasn't able to get away. And
right. And probably anger and resentment. That would make really good sense. If someone's doing something that you find very distasteful and they keep doing it when you're making all of the noises or communications that you know how to make to say, stop it, or I don't like this, and it continues, there would be frustration, there would be anger, there would be emotional hurt, and those would be the emotions.
Right. Yeah. There was definitely a lot of hurt because it was clearly something that the others took pleasure in, you know, they were having fun at my, you know, I felt like at my expense. There was a lot of hurt there too.
And I'm not drawing any, you know, powerful connections between that and the research that I was referring to by Lisa Feldman Barrett. The kind of connection to the Lisa Feldman Barrett thing is the idea that when they track physiological responses, like, you know, hormone flow and brain firings and breath rate and, you know, the galvanic skin response on the fingers, et cetera, when they track that, And that's the kind of thing they were looking at. They're looking at all of these physiological responses, facial muscle twitches, secretions in the stomach, you know, muscle twitches in the stomach and the throat, self, you know, individual reported about the physical sensations. So when they track that kind of thing, here's an example. They find in the laboratory and in real life that the physiological responses are almost identical between people who report exhilaration and people who report terror.
Okay.
And the difference between the two is the interpretation. So
okay.
Some people say, I love this roller coaster ride. And some people say, I hate that roller coaster ride. And when you track those two people about their heart rate and about their respiration and about all these other physiological factors, they're almost identical.
But, you know, I think
the labeling and the experience of the emotion is the internal guess about what it means. Go ahead.
I think that it does relate because, I mean, a lot of kids love to be tickled. Their experience of it is, you know, that fun. It's, and so I'm wondering if my experience of it was based on an interpretation and not, and that it was my interpretation that made the feeling of it so torturous.
Well, there's some of that, and then there's some of it which is, you know, the individual experience of the physical sensations, the regulation or dysregulation of the central nervous system has a tremendous amount of variation from person to person. And so for some people, it's literally physically painful. And that internal experience of it being painful, you can't get a reading of from a physiological scan.
Mm-hmm.
This is why it's so useful for people in the medical field to talk with patients about, tell me what your belief, what your feeling, what your interpretation of your pain level is from 0 to 10. Well, here's a person with a dislocated finger, and they say it's about a 4. And here's another person with a splinter in their thumb, and it's a 7 out of 10. And the individual subjective experience can be dramatically different. And some of it's going to be driven by maybe the person's in shock, maybe the person's adrenaline and endorphins have kicked in for one person and it hasn't kicked in for the other. So, well, I'm just trying to help you separate out any kind of judgment from your experience. It doesn't matter whether it was right, wrong, good, bad, up, or down. Your experience of it was that it was torturous. Your experience of it, it was something you didn't like and you wanted it to stop, and they wouldn't stop.
Right.
And that's valid.
Mm-hmm.
And your feelings about it, your experience of it, your physical sensations of it are valid.
Right, and it had
nothing. And there's nothing in this research that would invalidate that.
Okay. Yeah, and then it had major consequences for me. I mean, it took me many years after I became an adult to not jump at someone just touching me. And I was so ashamed. I don't know. I guess because I was just teased about being so sensitive that I thought it was something to be ashamed of. And, you know, when I first started dating, it was wow. I was too ashamed to tell, you know, my boyfriend. So I would just do everything in my power not to jump, because on my body, I would just have full body spasms, you know, at a touch. And I would try and hold myself so tense that my body wouldn't start spasming. Like, really?
Yeah. And again, because of the history with you, you gave that a meaning that it was very uncomfortable, very unwanted, very distasteful. And that same kind of thing was interpreted by others as being fun and stimulating, tickling, in other words. Because sometimes
right.
when people are tickled, they're going into those whole body spasms. For some people, that tickling leads to, you know, all kinds of stimulation, including orgasms, which is that full
mm-hmm.
body spasm. But when it's
mm-hmm.
interpreted as something I don't want, and you ask for it to stop and they don't, it becomes abusive. Your experience
right.
of it was that it was abusive, disrespectful, discounting, dismissive, etc.
Right. So, this is something that I'm really working on right now. Because it was something I never felt like I had any control over, like how my body reacted to touch after that.
Yeah, there's a certain part of it where that's what they're saying. In this research, the body just has a response. And then we make a guess about what that means. And we interpret whether it's something that is safe for us or not safe for us, that we like or we don't like. And there's a lot of that that is learned. So it's entirely possible that if you wanted to learn to be okay with that physical touch or tickling, you could train your body to be okay with it. You could train your mind to reinterpret those messages. Unless,
mm-hmm.
of course, you've got one of those central nervous systems that goes into, you know, regulation/dysregulation, and then you don't have a choice. There are some people who are whether they're on the autism spectrum or not, they have dramatically different internal experiences from their central nervous system, and they're unpredictable. And so you'll be talking to somebody and you'll have the same tone of voice and the same volume for the entire conversation, and their experience of it could be that you're screaming in their ear 1 minute and whispering the next. Or they can put on their favorite shirt one morning and it feels good, and 5 minutes later it feels like it's stripping their flesh off and they can't get out of the shirt fast enough. And nothing has changed in the shirt, but something has changed in the central nervous system regulation/dysregulation for that person. And you might have some of that related to your physical touch.
Mm-hmm.
So it's okay either way, and what we're calling people to is to just observe it and learn more about it and notice when the judgment happens, and then if you don't like the results of the judgment, give yourself permission to choose again. So I thank you for comments and questions. We are passing our time, so I will wish you a lovely weekend and mute you. Thanks for the call. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tian. Good, great conversation. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today's Friday, December the 3rd, 2021, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And I'll talk just a little bit and give Michael time to get dialed in. And thank you for once again listening to a pre-recorded show while we were busy doing things. Life has been a little bit wild lately. But if you go to our website, which is www.whyagain.org, whyagain.org, and you can click on the Start Here button that's in the upper left corner, or you can scroll down, click on the bullseye in the middle of the page. They both take you to the same place, and that's where you're going to find all kinds of tools. You'll find the book, PowerPoint presentations. There's MP3s of shows, just lots and lots of information. All of the worksheets to all of the other workshops besides the forgiveness work. And if you've downloaded the latest update on the app on Google, we don't have it yet on the iPhone, Apple. We're still working on that. But on Google, it's been updated. You'll also find there's a link that says more, and it will take you to all of the worksheets as well, besides just the forgiveness worksheet. So that app is totally taken on a new turn, and hopefully it'll serve everyone even better. We're also coming up on, you know, we're doing the monthly Mind Shifters and Steel Point Breathing. And so not tomorrow, but next Saturday, the 11th, we will be doing that again. If you haven't signed up for it and you're interested in participating, we'll give you a Mind Shifter to do. And then we'll be processing that Mind Shifter Saturday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern time. And then we'll follow that by a breath session. That's working out really well to do this online. And so if you want to participate in it and you haven't already signed up, please get in touch with Michael or myself, and let's get you registered and get you a Mind Shifter, get you started so that you'll be ready for Saturday, again, not tomorrow, but next Saturday the 11th. And there are three ways that you can join that membership. You can do just one session, or you can do three sessions, or you can sign up for a year. And there's different pricing. You can, on our website, if you click on the, I'm going to it as I'm speaking so that I make sure and tell you the right direction. So if you go to whyagain.org and you can scroll down just a little bit and there is a section that says events. And there's the Mind Shifter Steel Point Breathing monthly information. There's also the codependence to interdependence and responsibility communication intensive. And that is one that it's 90 hours of video. And so you do that on your own time in your home. They're on Vimeo, so you stream them. And then we're here 5 days a week to support you if you have any questions or comments and you need some help on that. Then we are here to answer those questions. So I am not sure where Michael is at this moment, but I'll invite you that if you have a question or a comment, go ahead and press 1. And I see him out back, and he's probably just lost track of time. So I'm going to give him a cue up. So if you give me just a minute. All right, he had lost track of time, so he will be with us here in just a second. But if you have a question, go ahead and press 1. I'll be glad to entertain it until he gets on there. And I had a comment based on the conversation that Ellen was having, but I wanted to wait until Michael got on for that. I see Susan's hand went up, so I'm going to say hello. How are you today?
Hi, Jeannie. I'm fine, thanks. I wanted to give a little grandson report. It won't be long, but he came back from 5 weeks of working on addiction and mental health issues and came home
That's awesome.
A completely different person, so much stronger. He'd been eating well. He understood that he can't have any psychedelics at all, and he is off all substances, and he's going to meetings. He spent 4 days with us and then packed his car and drove home, and he got himself a job as a teacher of acting and singing down there while he's going to meetings and taking the rest of this year off, and then he'll go back to school somewhere, not sure where exactly, maybe his old school. But he's fragile and sweet, and he's
he's just so much better. So I wanted to thank you for all the help that happened, and
that
he didn't decide to stay with us. Yeah, it's just exciting to have him back, and he's back as the self he was before he started using pot in high school. He's actually this animated fellow who notices what other people are doing and thinking, and is interested in other people. And anyway, I just wanted to check in with you and tell you that quickly.
Oh, I'm so glad. So now is he in Florida, or where did he go back with his parents, or what?
He's with his mother in Florida, and one other brother is in and out week by week. The youngest son spends a week with his dad and then a week with his mother. And so next week, the two brothers will be together with my daughter. And my daughter is a little frightened because she works full time, but Jake is going to step up and do grocery shopping and cooking and all sorts of things to help be an active guest in, participant in the household now, which he was way not able to do before.
So sweet.
Fabulous.
And yeah, it's really nice. And I've been talking to him about, not about going off his meds, because his mother asked me not to. He said that she said he really needed those meds to stabilize him, and he himself wants not to have to be on them forever. But so that's going to be a long haul, I think, getting him to the point where he feels strong enough and convinced enough that he can do a regular life without the help of antidepressants, anti-anxiety, sleep medication, this, that, and the other. But the medications did stabilize him. There might have been a better way to go, but that's the one they picked, and it certainly did a lot for him.
Sounds like it worked. That's awesome.
I hope it worked, and I hope he's able to find his way to being healthy without them. But that's me wanting that for him. He's got to find his way there himself. But
well, my take would be that the thing you can do is give him the tools. And if he's got the tools, then he, if it ever comes to the point where it's time for him to let go of them, he'll be able to manage his life because he's got the tools to do it.
Right. Well, I haven't given him the tools, although he saw me using them, and he saw a healthier grandmother than I might have been without using the tools. So it's once removed at this point, the tools.
Sounds like a great start.
It is a great start. Thanks a lot, guys. So Tim and I.
Well, I congratulate.
Just the two of us.
Well, I congratulate and acknowledge you both for holding the space and giving that young man a foundation to move out of some of those old traumas.
Mm. Yep. Ongoing. Thanks. So carry on. I've been listening sporadically. It's been chaotic, but it's a little more settled down now here at the house. Not so much going on.
Well, you know, I was talking to actually Patrick from the intensive this morning, and he's got someone who's going through some pretty heavy turmoils. And where our conversation ended was in having this person listen to the radio show where Magda called in, and she did some work on her grandfather who had passed. And it was just a really powerful piece of work. And if you look at, you know, the fact that you were on some of those same meds, and you've done your work, and you've been able to clear the space for them, and, you know, moving forward, then, you know, you've laid the foundation for the next layer. And life with, if the meds are straightening out his mind, that's awesome. The tools are helping him straighten out a little further, and then he's at least got choice from there.
Yeah, right. Wonderful to have that option. And not feel.
Well, we'll hold the space for the right choices.
Thanks, Michael. Okay.
All right. Well, anything else going on for you, young lady?
Oh, not really, thanks. I can't think of anything at the moment. I mean, everything, you know, tons, but it's all the usual stuff.
Well, tell Tim we said hello and we send our love.
Thanks, Michael.
Do we have a still point breathing coming up soon?
It'll be not this Saturday, but the following Saturday. Yes, we're on it.
Okay, good. All right.
All systems go. Awesome. All right, young lady. Appreciate you. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Well, my apology to everyone for being late. I got into working on the garden and just totally lost track of time. So in the future, I'll pay more attention to the time. And we are on chapter 22 from Why Is This Happening to Me Again? The Aramaic Solution. We've been talking to the character Richard about the idea that, you know, the replicant mind has no choice, it's just decisions, and when we make the same decisions over and over again, hoping that we'll get a different result, then we're locked into a thing called insanity. And so the objective of the Aramaic Solution is to restore the mind to its proper power supply so that wherever we are, whatever we're doing, there is sanity. And we get to live as human beings. We have higher faculties. The higher faculties operate. It's not something that's an anomaly or weird. It's just natural that you're guided. You live in an energy system that has far, far beyond five physical senses. And if what's been taken in by the physical senses that seems to govern most of the planet, at least to date, then the norm is to live in the replicant mind, replaying the same stuff, you know, and anyone who never learns to go in and change the content of their own unconscious minds, never learns to forgive, ends up living in that replicant mind. And the title of my book, I feel so privileged that the universe reserved that title. Why is this happening to me again? Because if we never bypass the replicant mind, then, you know, from moment to moment, day to day, year to year, relationship to relationship, job to job, home location to home location, we get to do, why is this happening to me again? Generation to generation. And when we choose to clean it up, we open a space for choice. And choice is a faculty that comes from the created essence of self, being. It empowers the mind to be fueled properly by the energy that it's designed to be fueled by. And it leaves us in a place where choice runs life rather than decisions. And so that's been our conversation with our character, Richard. And I've just given him a definition of forgiveness. You know, he's talked about previously in the book how he realized that when he was in hostility or fear, he didn't make very good decisions, and that he was most intelligent when love was present in his mind. So true forgiveness removes from the human system the realities that defile human intelligence, health, prosperity, relationships. It's the key to aliveness. How do we do this worksheet process, Richard says. I don't have a clue what subject to do it on. Do you have any suggestions? And it's interesting, we'll get people who say, well, I don't have anything to do worksheets on. Well, Jeannie's created a whole section on the website for those who don't have any worksheets, anything to work on. Jeannie, I'm not familiar with where that is on the new website. Can you just share with the audience where it is?
It's
and
actually,
I assume they can access it from the app now, too, can they?
Yes, yes. It's,
sweet.
I had actually announced that while I was waiting on you to come in. If
oh,
they
cool.
click on Start Here or scroll down and hit the bullseye, on the app you click the little button that says More. And in all three of those places you'll find all of the worksheets other than the forgiveness worksheets. And one of the things on there, it says learn what tools to use when, and hints for those among us who have no issues. So.
Does it actually say that, or is it hints, or does it say hints for those who think they have no issues?
It says hints for those among us who, quote, who have no issues, unquote. And then I say,
okay.
This is a list, not all inclusive, for those who pretend that they have no issues to do wake-up sheets.
Aha, there you go. So we've covered all the bases. And that's what we're here to do, to cover as many bases as possible from the experience we have, so that, you know, there's a wonderful line that says, personal experience is awesome, especially if it's somebody else's personal experience. So we're here to be totally, completely utilized to take everything we've learned, you know, between Dr. Tim and myself and Jeannie and Michelle, just as facilitators on the show, we've got, what, 50, 80, about 120 years of experience. And, you know, it makes life a whole lot easier if you don't have to go out and reinvent the wheel. So we're here to give the best of input that we have, the best of understanding that we have of each of the tools. Not that it's perfect for any one of us. We're still learning, still opening. I know that after 50 years of doing this work, the last 2 years have been by far the most important 2 years of work that I've done. And it just seems to keep, it's like when the opening gets bigger, you realize there's a massive opening possible. And when the massive opening happens, you realize you're just at the beginning, and then a real opening occurs. So it's a process. And you go through several layers where you think of yourself in a certain way, and that self is false. That's the self that Yeshua said, in order for you being to live, you non-being self have to die. That self goes through many stages and changes. And as long as it's running your life, then your life is a replicate life. And we're literally playing out of the past. You know, Yeshua talked about that principle. He said, the dead bury the dead, and the blind lead the blind. So what we're doing, and, you know, we spoke of those who, having eyes, do not see. Seeing doesn't happen with the eyes. And the brain doesn't see properly unless it's fueled properly. And it is only fueled properly when it is connected to active present love. And so Richard asked the question. I said, well, let's explore the waitress picking up your cup of coffee in the restaurant. So in an earlier chapter, we talked about the fact that he had an experience where he went into a restaurant and he's sitting having a cup of coffee. And the waitress comes over and takes his cup, and he all of a sudden flies into a rage at her. So I'm suggesting he go back and think about that. I think some of the things revealed in that conversation will be useful to discover how your mind produces its "why is this happening to me again" experience. Now, it's interesting. Every mind has its own "why is this happening to me again" experience, and every mind produces it differently. And the variations on the theme are monumental. But because we are creators, if we don't ever correct the content of carbon-based memory, and our creation flows through that carbon-based memory, then our mind is going to generate perceptual constructs that produce the same experience because they're coming from the same data. If you're live and in the moment, then you're never coming from the same data twice. You're fueled by love, but the data coming in, you know, the Harvard research that we've talked about says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells are firing, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity happening, and the max amount of information that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits of that data. It's been estimated that the actuality contains potentially 20 trillion bits of data. So if you got a 9-bit mind in a 20 trillion bit world, it's pretty limited. If we keep doing the same things over and over again, if we keep counting on the same 9 bits of data and the same, you know, stored in carbon-based memory, then the general output of the mind, the general perceptual constructs, never change. And we've got 20 trillion bits we could be playing in. So there's always, if you're live in the moment, instead of playing out of the replicant mind, there's always a new opening, a new live thing happening. You know, people say, well, you know, back 20 years ago, I had a wonderful relationship. I had a fun time. Life was great. I wish I could just have that all back again. Well, that's all stored in carbon-based memory. And you could set yourself up so you bring that all back again. And while it was nice when it happened and it was live, if it happens again, it's dead. It's past. Even if the nice stuff is replicated, it's still not living a human life. Now, some people may say, yeah, but it still sounds pretty good. Well, you know, it's that old saying of, you know, money can't buy you happiness, but it can make a good down payment. You know, I've been rich and I've been poor. I'd rather be rich. If you're suffering and you're rich, it's different than suffering when you're poor, but it's still suffering. So what if we were to literally step into the place where we take responsibility for our suffering, for our projected pain, for the painful content in our own minds? We remove it. We quiet that thing, and we bring in the fueling called love so that the mind is always fueled by that active presence of love. And every new moment is a live moment filled with the thrill of life instead of replicate. So what I'm suggesting to our character Richard here is that he start to look at how his mind produces his particular "why is this happening to me again" experience. Now, for him, that, you know, if we start looking there, it should be a fertile ground for finding material for several very productive worksheets. And if you want to read that section of the book, Coffee Experience, you can go back to page 31 through page 34. So Richard says, I'm ready to look at everything in my life. He seemed inspired to begin the worksheet process. Well, let's look at what your description of events that day in the restaurant alluded to, and see if any of the issues I think might be there are accurate. So I'm going to offer him some feedback from having worked with a lot of people at that point. And in offering feedback, it's not for me to say this is what it is, but I'll give you feedback saying, well, take a look. Does this look like? Does this fit? And give him some guidance so he doesn't have to, you know, figure his own way out through the whole thing. For assistance, when you were small, were there brothers and sisters that your parents favored over you? Perhaps to the point where they gave your toys to them, I probed. Did you ignore and fight a lot with them? Richard said, things are always taken from me. I never had anything to myself. But how do you know that? I don't know how you figured that out, Richard sounded bewildered. I didn't know it, Richard, but I suspected it when you told me, in rough detail, about the waitress picking up your cup of coffee. I didn't tell you about my childhood then, Richard countered. I explained to him that he didn't, but his story did. You break that word history down, it's his story. See, the realities that show up in a mind always first tell about the content of the mind. So all you have to do is listen to someone's words and someone's story. And if you're listening for the patterned, why is this happening to me again experience, the words will explain it to you fully. You don't have to be a genius to put it together. You just need to listen carefully. Almost everyone experiences their own internal reality in place of what is happening in the world. This means there is a pattern or theme for every reality flowing from brain cells. The words coming from a mind reflect the general patterns contained in the mind of the speaker. Words of delight and inspiration reflect a way of life that's designed as it's designed to be. Angry words reflect an angry history, sad words a sad past, and fearful or fearsome words tell a story of a mind brought up in what was perceived as an unsafe world. And the key thought at this point in the book is, and we're on page 156 if you're following along, your words show you what mind energy you are using to construct your realities moment to moment. So let's reiterate some of the foundational ideas here. One, your I is not a two-way valve. Take light energy in and see out of your eyes. That's a fraud. The eye is a one-way mechanism. It takes light energy in. It is actually quite literally an antenna for light. Now, you can't see out of the antenna. People say, oh, I saw that happen. The truth is, you've never seen anything happen anywhere in the world, ever. Well, Michael, what do you mean? I'm just looked over there at the window. I see the window. No, I offer you don't see the window. Yes, there's light energy. Notice that if you were seeing the window, if there was no light energy in the room, you'd look over there, you'd see the window. But if there's no light energy in the room, there's going to be no appearance of a window. You remember the Yeshua said, do not judge by appearances. So there's light energy bouncing off the window. It hits your antenna called the eye. The eye converts that to an electrochemical frequency that resonates content in the brain. And your brain generates the image of the window that you see. Yes, the specifics of the window, you know, if it's painted blue, if the shutters are, you know, yellow, and if the window is cracked, then that gives you information about the actuality, but that's just information about the actuality. You're not seeing the actuality. Your brain is replicating, oh, blue window, yellow sashes, and a cracked piece of glass. But your brain has to have the brain cells. You know, if you put a fly in front of the window and held it and said, now tell me what you see. Do you see that crack in the window? The fly doesn't have a perceptual mechanism to see cracks in windows. The fly wouldn't in a million years say, oh, there's a crack in that window. We have a perceptual mechanism designed for certain purposes. And our brain is designed to give us the best information it has, the best guess it has about what is true about the window. But it can't show us the window. So the constructs of the mind, you know, there's an interesting piece of information we came up with back a few years ago. It showed up in a book. You can go to the CIA.gov, CIA website, and they've got a book there that you can download free. You paid for it as a taxpayer, probably millions of dollars. And it's called The Study of Human Intelligence. And there's a section in the book on perception. And what they're doing, you know, they're doing research to find the best way to get the most accurate intelligence from their intelligence agents. And here's what the book verbatim says. Now, we've been teaching this for 5 decades, but here's what the book says. The mind does not perceive reality. The mind generates reality. So one person may look at and their brain generate an image of a window with a crack in it and go, oh, we're going to have to call somebody in to repair that. Somebody else might look at it and their brain generates an image of a cracked window and they go, oh my God, we have to get, I don't know how to do that. We have to get somebody here to repair it. It's going to cost at least $200. I don't have $200. What are we going to do? And now you've got somebody who's just going to make a phone call and you got somebody else now in their worry mode. And how are we going to survive mode? So all the meanings, especially the ones based in hostility or fear, that our mind gives to its generated images, the realities it generates, are changeable. Here's the point. Here's the Aramaic wisdom. They're all changeable. Everything based in hostility or fear is false perception. False perception is born of error. When you correct the error, the false perception collapses and you're freed from it. Now, the world hasn't taught us that. The world's taught us, oh, you see that out there and that's the way it is out there. But actually, the realities that show up in your mind show you the way you are. First and foremost, not the way the world is. when you recognize that, then life just becomes so much more flexible, so much more amenable to change. And it's a process. And ultimately, to give you the long view, ultimately what we're looking to do is we're looking to get to the point where you are able to collapse any reality based in any form of hostility or fear. Somebody gives you the look. Somebody snubbed you. Somebody left you. Somebody said nasty words to you. What does that resonate in you? Forgiveness is a tool from the first century Aramaic language which describes how to collapse pained perception, how to access the internal root of the pain and remove it. That's what we're here to support. That's what we're here to do. Literally, forgiveness, it has nothing to do. You know, the whole Greek idea of you made me mad, you made me sad, this is all your fault, but it's okay, I'm going to let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me. That whole conversation has nothing whatsoever to do with forgiveness, although that's the conversation of the whole world. The forgiveness conversation in Aramaic looks more like, wow, I just had some pain come up in me. As this pain's coming up, I realize that I'm not breathing. There's something going on inside of me. I think I'll breathe. I think I'll apply forgiveness. And incidentally, in the Aramaic language, the word forgive means, or actually translates literally as, the word is shebag, and it literally translates to cancel. And it was lost in translation. And I certainly understand that because it took me about 35 years of working with the Aramaic to be in the space where I was willing enough to be taught and shown what was going on with it and how it worked. And in essence, remember this 9-bit mind that was talked about in that Harvard research, it's the screen of perception. Perceptual constructs are shown there. If there's pain projected into a perceptual construct, the reason there's pain in, you know, resonated into that construct is because you loaded a goal that resonates and relates to your pain. And when that pain was resonated, it showed up as part of your mind's construct, part of your reality. Now, when you realize the word forgive in Aramaic is shebag, and it literally translates to cancel, what does that mean? It means that understanding that the goal that you hold is the driver for that perception, and if you load a goal that, let's say, resonates fear in you, then brain cells based in fear will be the brain cells firing that produce your perceptual construct, and you will see something out there that you fear. Or at least you think that the fear is coming from out there. But what's really happened is you've built a picture of what you think is something out there out of those brain cells keyed to fear. And when you collapse that picture, and the way you collapse it, and it sounds silly living in the normal world, it sounds silly to say the key to healing is everything you ever wanted, every goal you hold when you have some sort of pained perception is a goal that needs to be canceled. And people say, well, Michael, what's wrong with that goal? I just wanted that guy to care for me. That's reasonable, isn't it? I say, that's very reasonable. Well, I think it's reasonable for me to want everybody to care. I think it's totally reasonable for you to want everybody to care for you. And I'm not suggesting that you cancel that goal ever. I will never suggest you cancel it because that's an unreasonable goal. It's very reasonable. The reason I will suggest you cancel it is because whenever you load it in your mind, it recruits into activity something based in pain in you. And when you cancel the goal, that perceptual construct gets to collapse in on its own footprint. And when it collapses in on itself, then you get to confront directly the pained content. As long as you're using the pained content to build your brain's image of someone else, and they're showing up in your mind as the cause of your pain, then you are in an indirect relationship with that which causes your pain. When you cancel the goal and that perception collapses, you get to drop into direct relationship with the root of your pain. And if you're functioning as and out of the active presence of love, and that underlying hidden pain's content comes forward and is exposed to the active presence of love, then healing occurs. That's the core of the process of healing. So you don't cancel a goal because it's a bad goal, because there's something wrong with it, because you should never have wanted that in the first place. Want whatever you want, but if you notice when you load a want, you load a goal into your mind, that you go into some sort of pain or trauma while that goal's loaded, then realize the key way to healing is the canceling of that goal, the collapsing of the perception that hides the root of the pain from you, dropping into the very root of the pain. Now, that's not always, pardon me, I should say that differently, that's always going to lead you confronting and feeling your pain directly. It is not Dr. Feelgood. And if you do that with willingness, wow, life just starts to sail along on such a different note. So, Miss Jeannie, it's about 23 or 24 minutes to. Do we have anybody out there in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet.
Well, then let's put out an all-call bulletin saying, put up your hand, let's have a conversation. How can we support you? What's happening in your world? What are the specifics? I've given you a general picture of how this game works. Now, how can we get specific and support you? What's happening in your world? Questions about the process you're doing, support you need with the worksheet. How can we assist you?
I'm going to turn on Ellen's microphone.
Cool.
At the beginning of the show, I had a comment or question based on what she and Dr. Tim had been talking about, but I wanted to wait until you got on the show to ask it, and now I don't remember what it was. So, Ellen, I don't know if you can give a synopsis of the last part of your and Dr. Tim's conversation, and then maybe it'll ring a bell back in my head.
Well, Dr. Tim was talking about physical sensations and how we interpret those, and that's what guides our emotional responses to the physical sensations. And I was just asking him about a situation I had as a child where I was tickled against my will, and it was a feeling I just couldn't take it. And yet, you know, it was something that was done over and over to me. And I was just wondering, because, you know, a lot of kids like to be tickled. And for me, it was torture. So was that something, was that just simply an interpretation? I mean, it didn't seem to be like an interpretation to me. It just seemed to be a physical response. So I was asking him about that. So I don't know if that triggers.
The offering I would put, and maybe this will help stimulate for you, Jeannie, the offering I would have would be that, yes, sometimes kids like to be tickled in terms of having fun with someone. And that can be laughing in a fun way. But actually, tissue is ticklish. Ticklish is the first stage of pain. It's an early stage of pain. And so if someone, you know, and this sadly oftentimes is an adult way of controlling a child, or an adult playing out a power person dynamic of control and inflicting pain. But that sensitivity that comes with tickling is actually the first stage or an early stage of tissue expressing pain.
Okay.
So that would be my offering in it. And what you want to do is, there's a thing that we do with our still point breathing process where we talk about what we call body breathing. And when you're doing the still point process, actually allow yourself to breathe into the area of the body that is holding the pain, or in this case, the ticklish tissue, to actually imagine bringing your breath in through that tissue, and it will oftentimes loosen whatever that pain is about and begin the process of healing there.
So are you saying that there was pain in the tissue prior to being tickled, and that's what made it ticklish?
Well, just trying to think of how to best explain it. You know, when I go back in my medical training, one of the things that we were taught is people, you know, if you go to a place like you're palpating someone's spine, and one of the things that I've studied is how to adjust the spine and palpate the spine. And so you're looking for sensitivities, and you're not, you know, in many cases people have extreme pain in that tissue. And in some cases it won't be extreme pain, but it will be sensitive to the touch in the way of it being ticklish. And that is an early stage of pain. So whether someone found a place in you and tickled to the point where they inflicted pain, or were just uncovering pain that was there, you know, there's no way we can determine that at this point. But when you realize that that's what was going on, then, you know, that's a place to start looking at. And, you know, I think that an adult, you know, it's tickling a child like that is kind of like a child, to me, is kind of like an adult scaring a child. It's like they get some kind of thrill or fun out of it. And I think it's sort of a perverted behavior that comes from that behavior having been done to them by an adult. It's a power person dynamic, and, you know, it oftentimes can be a control issue. And, you know, they'd be the issues to...
Yeah, it wasn't an adult in my case. It was always initiated by my brother, and then my sister would sometimes join in, and occasionally my father would join in, but it was primarily my brother, and I know it was his way of trying to feel some sort of power in the house.
Right, yeah.
But for me, it never felt just ticklish. It felt like... it was pain. It was pain. So,
well, and on an intuitive level, if someone's going for, you know, control, going for, you know, finding a way, trying to find a way to feel power, they will also tend to tune into the places where the energy's held that is traumatic. And so from what you're describing, it sounds like very likely that there was already some trauma in that tissue, and he just, you know, that's where his hands went. And of course, when I said adult, I don't really mean necessarily an adult, but someone who's bigger and stronger is usually the one doing the tickling.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Have you done any worksheets around your brother and, you know, maybe your brother in control, those sorts of things?
I haven't done any around him. I did one around, I came up with a mind shifter based on a worksheet that I did around the tickling, which was, it is safe and healing to be in my own skin. And this really all came up because I've been having lots of skin issues. And when I looked up skin in Louise Hayes' book, I think it's called You Can Heal Your Life, it showed that skin represents our protection. And that was one thing I did not have at all in my in my early childhood. And my skin did, certainly has never felt like my protection. It felt like my great sensitivity that causes me pain. So I'm not surprised that I have all kinds of skin issues going on.
So how about a mind shifter maybe help to resonate some of those skin issues up to the level of awareness so you can move it out of tissue and your skin go back to just doing what it was designed to do, and that is to protect you?
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Okay. So if you've got a pen handy, I've got a mind shifter in mind.
Okay. 1 second. Okay.
It's safe and healing. And I always loved it. When my siblings would inflict this isn't exactly good English, but would inflict tickling on me.
But it's a good word, inflict, because it wasn't.
It is.
A playful
thing. I got it.
Thing.
I hear you. Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like it was control and sometimes a way of passing on the pain from a place of helplessness. Trying to look for some way, some modicum of control.
Right. Yeah.
So that would be a good mind shifter, I think, to do. And then listen, you know, develop the ears. There are energetic patterns held in your skin that as you listen to your skin speak to you, it will tell you what it is you need to resolve. And you'll resolve it. And when you resolve it, your skin will return to normal appearance and normal function. The only reason it dysfunctions in any way is because there are interfering energy patterns in it. And this will be an opportunity for you to literally listen to the tissue in your body give you information about what's going on there. And, you know, it might be something that goes back 10 generations.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever heard the... the radio show, or did you hear the radio show where Magda did a session around her grandfather?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, I'll get a copy of that and send it to you. And it actually came from a mind shifter that she did out of our codependence, the interdependence intensive. And it's one of the most profound pieces of healing I've ever seen. I've heard her go through it. She, you know, it happened during the intensive. And it brought me to tears. It was so profoundly powerful. And then when she called into the radio show a few days later, I was in tears again as she talked about just how powerful it was when she was ready to get quiet enough to listen to something other than her mind. And
yeah.
Your tissue, I mean, literally your organs and your skin is just an organ, it will talk to you. It will inform you as to what's there, what's going on. And, you know, as I say it, you know, it might be 10 generations old. I'm not sure why, but intuitively I keep getting a thought each time I mention that. The thought comes of perhaps something in the way of a fire somewhere in the genes.
Interesting.
And the place for me that it goes, and just put it out to see if it clicks anything, if it resonates anything. But what it resonates in me is grief. When I think about it, when I just let myself take a deep breath and tap in on the deepest level, it's like that's what moves in me. And you know that might be.
Like deep hurt around this whole thing because it, you know, I perceived that that my siblings were getting a lot of joy out of watching me scream and try and get away. And so
mean.
That was very, very, very hurtful to me. And then at another level, too, that my mother didn't protect me from it.
Right.
You know, she said she tried to, but, I mean, she didn't impose her authority.
So these are all the things that would go on the right-hand side of the page for that mind shifter.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure that I can formulate this question or thought, but what came up for me was a memory or a thought, I'm not sure which, of someone tickling, but it was actually their way of touching inappropriately, and yet it appeared to be acceptable.
Powerful.
And then a second thought or whatever is that eventually myself making it to accept the pain and endure it, and then having mixed emotions, that the pain is acceptable. I'm not phrasing that real good, but that's what came up for me listening to you talk about it, Ellen. So that's mine to do.
Well, I have had my share of inappropriate touching done to me as well as the tickling. I mean, which is another form of inappropriate touching.
Yes. So was there ever any sexual energy pointed at you by your brother or that you're aware of?
Not by my brother, no. I had my mother's or my grandmother's boyfriend. I think there was something going on there because I remember feeling so uncomfortable. He always wanted to set me on his knee, and I did not like him. And I can't really remember why, but I think it was because he may have, touched me inappropriately. And then I had others outside of the house that also did similar types of things to me. But the tickling itself had a real big effect on my relationships with boys and men as I grew up because I was so adverse to touch and so ashamed that it affected me that way. That, like, it took me, throughout my teenage years, and I don't remember how long it lasted. I mean, I was just too ashamed to even tell any of my boyfriends that I had a problem with this, so I would just try and bear the touch.
So this is all the stuff goes on the right hand side of the mind shifter. This is all tied right in and related. Shame's going to be a big part of the healing. Shame is some of the energy that's literally held in the skin. You know, the skin is a part of your mind. And so there are the memories held there. And these are the things that, you know, you're going to want to do worksheets around. And who knows, any one of them or every one of them might be 77 times 70 worksheet issue to clean it out, to move that out of tissue so that the skin is alleviated of that burden.
Yeah. It was even like I couldn't go to the hairdresser and have someone wash my hair. I mean, it was, and I would do everything in my power to prevent my body from just spasming by having someone touch my head.
Bless your heart. That's one of my favorite parts of going to the salon. It's that washing of the hair. Whoa, you missed out on so much. I breathe with you and lament that we'd let go of that one because it's so delightful.
Yeah, and I'm okay with it now. So something changed.
Right.
And I actually allowed a friend of mine who was becoming a massage therapist to actually give me a massage once, because that was one day I was like, you know what, I could never be paid enough money to get a massage, But that was actually okay. Like, I've learned to really, like, if I can just get myself really relaxed beforehand, then I can be okay with it. If I just, know where the touch is going to go and not be surprised by it. So it's been a long journey of getting.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, I hold the space and breathe with you that all aspects of this issue you can process through, so that touch is just one, always appropriate, always respectful, and is delightful for you, whatever state you're in.
Right.
So that'd be the space I'd hold for you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely delighted, honored. Thanks for having the courage to open that up. That's a pretty deep piece of sharing. So we're here to hold the space, and if any other support's needed as it moves, we're here to be part of it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, young lady. Any other thoughts on your mind for today?
No, that's it. Thank you. Blessings.
All right, blessings. All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
So, Ms. Jeannie, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'll have to do some work around that because, I hadn't really thought about it. But listening to her and Dr. Tim talk about it, it was like, And so, but then that was when I said, I've got a question or a comment, but I want to wait till you get on. So, but then I forgot it. So I was glad she was able to refocus that one. And we're down to 3 minutes. So maybe tell people about next Saturday. I mentioned it at the beginning of the show, but.
Cool. No, it's not this Saturday coming, not tomorrow, but the following Saturday, right?
Not tomorrow, but the next one, the 11th.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so on the 11th, if anybody wants to come and play, we're doing a group Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. If you're interested in being part of it, it'll actually, if you register for the workshop, there are actually three different ways to register, three different packages to register. One is just a single session. One is a three-session package, and one is a whole year. We had such a powerful Zoom Still Point session back a few weeks ago that we decided to set up so that there was a year-long program that people could be a part of each month to really get a handle on how the Still Point process works and the Mind Shifters process as well. So if you're interested in joining us for that, the cost for a single session and what's included in a single session is you'll get a copy of the video Mind Shifters, an Introduction to Still Point Breathing. You'll get a Mind Shifters explanation from one of our intensives. And there was a radio show that we did called Why Mind Shifter. So it really covers the Mind Shifter process deeply. And we want you to listen to that prior to the workshop and the night before and the morning of do some writing of a Mind Shifter. And you'll get a package of Mind Shifters that comes with that. So you can select the ones, and we'll explain how we suggest you select it. And so the cost of doing one session is $150, and the workshop will start at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning, 10 Eastern time. We'll expect you have done some writing and some work with your Mind Shifter then 10, and we've got a small group at this point, so probably it'll be finished by 2, maybe 3, not sure exactly. Depends how much process work there is in it. And then the Tuesday following, we were at Wednesday, we shifted it to Tuesday. The Tuesday following at 7 o'clock till 9 in the evening, or 7 until completion point, depending how many questions are in process there is, we'll be doing a second session as part of it. So if you want to be part of that, a three package, you can commit to three sessions, and instead of being $150 for one, it's $375 for three of them. Or you can make a commitment for a whole year, and the year is $1,200. And if you pay that $1,200 or the year in advance, it's $900. It's discounted, so it gets down well under $100 per month to do that. So if you want to join us, drop Jeannie an email, Jeannie at whyagain.org. Include your name and phone number. We'll get back to you. Get you registered. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.